Okay, so we're beginning tonight in Mark chapter 12 and verse 41 as we look at what Jesus commended about this woman, this widow. Verse 41, and he sat down opposite the treasury and began observing how the people were putting money into the treasury. And many rich people were putting in large sums. A poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which amount to a cent. Calling his disciples to him, he said to them, truly I say to you, this poor widow put in more than all the contributors to the treasury. For they all put in out of their surplus, but she, out of her poverty, put in all she owned, all that she had to live on. Okay, and so Jesus commended this woman, and we want to learn why he commended her and give us a better appreciation of what he is looking at in us. In the Mark account, it says, where we read here in 41, he sat down and began observing. In the Luke account, in Luke 21, it says he looked up and saw the rich putting gifts into the treasury, and he saw. So he is observing some things in these people, and he's certainly observing us as well in all facets of our life, including the matter of our giving. All right, so it's interesting here as we look at the context in chapter 13, verse 1, as he was going out of the temple. So these are his last words in the temple before he's going to be arrested and crucified. And it's interesting also in verse 38 through 40 that what we're reading follows his scathing rebuke of the scribes and Pharisees in verse 38 through 40 for their hypocrisy. And so following that scathing rebuke, he watches the people contributing into the treasury. They had, according to secular sources, a number of large box is not really the good word, shaped like a trumpet, where people could put into this treasury. And he's sitting back and he's observing this. Okay, so that answers our first question, Mark 12:41. Now in verse 41, it says he observing how the people were putting money into the treasury. It's not a matter of whether they're putting in with their left hand or their right hand. It's just the fact that they were putting money into the treasury. And he's observing particularly that the rich are putting in out of their surplus, whereas this poor woman is putting in all that she owns. How does he know that's all she owns? All right, this is what we've been observing all the way through as we look at these commendations of Jesus. He doesn't have to be told. He knows about us. He knows if we're poor, and he knows if we're rich. And on Sunday, or forget Sunday, during the week, when we decide, okay, I'm going to write a check for so much, or I'm going to set aside a certain amount of cash, just understand nobody else in this church may know your financial situation. But the Lord that we are serving knows exactly what it is. He knows how much money you got in the bank. He knows how much money you got in savings. He knows how much money you spend for your luxuries or entertainment or whatever it may be. He knows how much money you're going to spend on Christmas gifts. He knows all of that. And so nobody had to tell the Lord this was all she had. But he knew that she had put in all that she owned. The text says that she put in the New American Standard Version, two small copper coins, which amount to a cent. That's really a translation of by the New American Standard Version, trying to give the reader some sense of what she put in. If you happen to compare the other versions, the King James Version, and this incident kind of gets its name from the way the King James puts it, she put in two mites, which amount to a farthing. The New King James says two mites, which make a quadrants. If you're reading the New American Standard Version, you trust that you always pay attention to those footnotes. I say always, at least look at them occasionally when there's added information that may be helpful. And if you look at the footnote on that verse 42, you'll see in number 2 on your marginal note, it says that this word they translated cent, you may think of a penny, but you look out in the footnote and it says, this is the word quadrants. And then there's an additional note. How accurate this is, I don't know. I did some research and I found this in several places, so maybe it is accurate. But anyway, it says in your marginal note, 1/64 of a denarius. Look at Matthew chapter 20, verse 2. What did a denarius generally represent in their society according to that verse? A day's wage, that's right, of a laborer. Maybe not a man that's up in the world, but a day laborer. This would be like all day long. So let's suppose this man, a day laborer today, we're just trying to get a sense of maybe what that would be in today's money. So let's say a day laborer makes $10 an hour, and he works 12 hours. So that's $120. And so if you divide that by 64, she put in about $1.88. Who cares? $1.88?
God cares.
God cares. That's right. And I know Pat and I have known churches we've been members of where there was a woman in Highlands who, I think she was a widow, fixed income. Guarantee you, when that tray came around, she gave. And I think there were times she'd even give extra when there were special needs. And I don't know how much it was. I don't know what people give. But it's interesting. The Lord knew exactly what it was. And it's recorded here in our text. And really how much it is, whether it's $1.88 or $10 or whatever it may be, is not the important thing. The important thing to observe is the contrast. And that contrast is that some people were putting in out of their surplus. They had plenty. And she was giving up everything she owned. So, we asked the question 1A, what should Jesus be observing in us? Now, you may think of Sunday when the tray comes around, but look at 2 Corinthians in chapter 9. First of all, we've got two verses here on your lesson. When you look at chapter 9, verse 7, what should precede Sunday morning? Verse 7, purposing. If you wait till you get to the church building and see what you got in your pocket, you're not given the thought that you need to give to what you're doing. It's not a matter of give and go to hell type thing. I got to put some money in the bucket or else I'm going to hell. It's not that kind of thing. And we see in this text what Jesus is looking for in people today. Now, this is a different contribution. This is a contribution that involves several churches, some in Achaia or Corinth, some in Macedonia, and some in Galatia. And as you read through these texts in chapter 8 and verse 1, what word does he use in verse 1 that describes this collection?
Grace.
The grace. Grace is an attitude of favor. These people wanted to give. They found it a privilege to give. And it reflected favor actually toward fellow Christians who were in need. And that's what giving needs to be. In fact, if you look in chapter 9 and in verse 7, at the end of the verse, not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. One that's giving out of grace in his heart, favor in his heart for whatever it is that he's giving to. And giving in the New Testament is always to meet some need or purpose. And if we have no concept of that, we really do not have the concept of giving that we ought to. What is my money going for? What is this? What am I doing with this? We don't know. We need to know. You'll note also in verse 2, what attitudes does he talk about there? He uses two different words. Verse 2?
Willingness and zeal.
What? Chapter 8, verse 2. I'm sorry. Y'all can't read my mind? I keep wondering, where are y'all reading? Chapter 8, verse 2. I don't know what you said, but I'm not going to ask. Okay. Chapter 8, verse 2. What two words does he use?
Joy and liberality.
Joy and liberality. So they, what's remarkable about this joy, what was the financial position of the Macedonians according to this verse?
They were
deep poverty. You'd think this would really be a distasteful thing. No, they're so glad. In fact, you see in verse 4, look at their attitude. Begging us with much entreaty for the favor of participation. And so Jesus observes the Macedonians and this attitude that they had. The word liberality, we think of amount, but that's really a secondary meaning to this word that they used. It really has to do with single-heartedness. The idea of their sincere desire to have fellowship with these other Christians who were in need. And it's heightened by the fact that the Christians in need were Jews, and these Christians that are giving are Gentiles. Can you think of an example that would parallel that today? Where might there be a reluctance to give because of this kind of difference? Yes. What if it's Muslims in need? Would you want to give? And so it can be racial barriers. It can be other kind of barriers. But here you see the reason they're giving. Look in chapter 9, verse 13. When these people receive this money, this ministry, he says they're going to glorify God for your obedience to your confession of the gospel of Christ. They had heard about these Gentiles, these pagans, way off obeying the gospel. Yeah, we heard about that. But here comes some money they sent. They don't even know their names. Why are they sending the money? Because they're fellow Christians. And this is proof or evidence that these people really did obey the gospel. And then the second thing is for the liberality. Again, forget the idea of amount. The sincerity of your fellowship. Instead of the word contribution, the basic word is fellowship. They really wanted to have a share in helping these Christians. There's the attitude. So we don't have in our society so much the benevolent aspect of our contributions because of the country we live in, the times we live in. People are generally well off, and they have government aid and pensions and all kind of other projects like that. And so that Christians in need are not a universal or widespread thing, at least that we are aware of. But what about, where does our money go? Where does 90% of our money go? You know where 90% of it goes? Preachers. 90%. Right at that figure. I just looked it up the other day. So in giving, do we sincerely express the desire to have fellowship with those men? I don't know. Nobody else knows. But remember, Jesus is sitting over there on the third pew observing. He's looking. And he's not just looking at the amount, he's looking at the attitude behind it. That's what happened here in our text. And so, back in 2 Corinthians again in chapter 8, what is it that was behind these Macedonians' attitude of wanting to help these fellow Christians so much and even begging for the privilege to share in it? Verse 5.
Devotion to the Lord.
They first gave themselves unto the Lord and to us, His ministers. So there's that attitude of devotion to the Lord that was behind it. And so you see that again, and that should be reflected in our giving. And I don't know what that money and that treasure was going for that would have contributed to. There's some secular sources that indicate some of the things that was used for, but be that as it may, Jesus knew what her attitude was. Any other comments on number 1A before we move on to B? Look at Acts chapter 5. Acts chapter 5. This is a very familiar story. Ananias and Sapphira. Why were these two people struck dead? Right. Not because of they didn't give everything they got out of the land. It says they sold some land, verse 1, and they kept back part of the money. Is that wrong?
No.
But then, evidently, when they contributed it, they wanted to present it as if they gave everything they got. Now, you have to wonder why they did that. Now, remember, this chapter division is put there by the translators. And so really this story begins back in chapter 4. And you see this spirit in verse 32 that people were selling property and wanting to take care of the needs that were before them. And then you have a particular example in verse 36 and 37 of a man named Barnabas who sold some land and took the money and laid it at the apostles' feet, that it put it under their control for distribution. Did Ananias and Sapphira see that? And did they maybe hear Barnabas complimented? I don't know. Was there pride involved? If not, I don't know why they lied about it. But be that as it may, and you know, pride's a hard thing to put your finger on as to why people are motivated. But clearly you can see in verse 9, that when Peter talked to Sapphira, why is it you've agreed together to put the Spirit of the Lord to the test? And so, in verse 4, he said to Ananias, you've not lied to men, but to God. Did he lie to men?
Yes.
Here's your not but construction. More importantly, lying to God. We can lie to one another. Maybe we won't know the difference, but I guarantee you to God does. Isn't it interesting in the beginning of the early church, you find Jesus doing what he was doing in his ministry? He was observing at the end of his ministry people putting into the treasury, and he observed attitudes. He's still observing from his throne in heaven here in the beginning of the early church. And isn't it interesting that the first act of judgment on early Christians was in connection with their giving, their attitudes in their giving. So it's certainly something to give thought to. Any other comments on Ananias and Sapphira? Wait before I leave them. If someone was to ask you about your giving, would you tell them, I'm giving all that I can? I hope not. Unless you're doing like that widow. Yeah, none of us are giving all that we can. Don't lie about it. Here's what I've decided to give. Is that enough? That's between you and the Lord. I don't know. What he is looking at is the heart behind it. But don't lie about this. I just can't do anymore. It's strange how we can't do anymore, but if we need a new car or truck or boat or land, we somehow find some money somewhere. Okay. Jesus commended the widow, number two, when he observed that she contributed all she owned. And not only Mark says that, but when you get over to Luke's account, that same thing is noted there, that it says she put in all that she had to live on. It's interesting. Both gospel writers mention this. And in Mark's account, it's almost like it's emphasized, because it not only says all that she owned, then he adds another statement, all that she had to live on. So you might say, do you mean everything she lived on? Is that what? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. How's she going to buy bread tomorrow? How's she going to feed herself? Let me ask the question here we got on the sheet. Since Jesus commended this woman, and you'll note in the text, and we'll talk more about this in just a moment. See that first word of verse 44? It's commendation for she put in all that she owned. And so since Jesus commended this woman for giving everything she had, does that mean we ought to contribute everything we own? No? How do you reach that conclusion?
Philemon was a rich man, considered to be a rich man.
Barnabas sold all the property, but that was out of what he had extra. He didn't give everything. In the first time, they talk about giving the Bible.
Okay, good point. Barnabas, a good example. And then Philemon, as Keith has mentioned, look at Philemon. And look at verse 16. What did Philemon own?
He
owned a slave. And Paul indicated he had a right to own that slave. In fact, he was sending him back to him. And in verse 18, what is indicated about Philemon's financial status in that verse? Apparently, Philemon had resources that could have been pilfered or stolen. If he owes you anything, I'll repay you. What repay? You're going to give all you own anyway. And then, so you see Paul's acknowledgement that Philemon had a right to property, right to ownership. And you see again in verse 22, what else do you see Philemon in possession of? A house, lodging. And lodging sufficient to put up a visitor, to put up Paul.
Verse 2 also talks about the church meeting in his house.
Okay, a good point. The church in your house. Okay, good observation. And so, and John's already made mention of Barnabas there in Acts chapter 4. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 6. Where is Timothy with this letter written to him? Where is he?
Ephesus.
And so if you remember the church at Ephesus, look at verse 17. What kind of people would be a part of the congregation where you were a member?
Rich people.
Instruct those who are rich in this present world to give up everything they have. Is that what he said?
To share.
And why did he say God richly supplied them with these things at the end of the verse?
To enjoy.
Nothing wrong with having possessions and enjoying them. The whole book of Ecclesiastes is dedicated to that. But to be ready to share, to be rich in good works, and to keep in focus, verse 19, the future. So nothing wrong with riches. Some of the greatest men of the Bible were rich men, weren't they? Abraham, wasn't he a rich man? Very rich man. And Daniel was a king. Obviously, he was rich. And so there were great and rich men in the Bible. Nothing wrong with riches. So, although Jesus commends this particular woman for giving up all she owned, when we apply the law of harmony in our Bible study, we know he does not expect us to contribute everything we own. And there are cases where that would not be a good idea. Like what?
You gotta pay your mortgage.
Gotta take care of your family. Don't you have a responsibility to take care of your family? So I'll just contribute it all, let the church take care of my family. That's not God's plan. All right, so we simply observe something here. We've got to balance our conclusions by doing what we talk about all the time, in striving to ascertain the will of God. We gather all the facts and reach a conclusion. Okay, so we ask the question, what was Jesus commending about this woman? How could Jesus say, and look at the text, it's right there in the text, it says, verse 43 of Mark chapter 12, that the poor widow put in more than all the contributors to the treasury. That's what the text says. So our question is, how in the world could Jesus say she put in more when in fact she put in less? Yes, Alex?
Her attitude.
That's what I think it is. Now, I was working on this, trying to understand it, and I read what several men said, and they said proportionately she put in more. And that's true. She put in what percentage? 100%. And so if a guy put in $1,000, that may have been 10%. So proportionally, that's true, but I'm not sure that's what Jesus is looking at. That, well, she gave proportionally more, but I'm with Alex. I think he's looking more at attitude. If you take this little phrase, she put in more, to be looking not at the action itself, but the attitude behind it. There's a figure of speech where one thing's put for another. You know what that one is, don't you? Metonymy. And if it's not the action itself, but the attitude behind it, the motivation, what it demonstrated about her heart, she did have more in her attitude, more in, first of all, faith and trust. What does Matthew 6:33 say? What? It's close. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and what will happen? What things? Food and clothing, the very basics of life. Believe it? We can quote it. Do we believe it?
She did.
Huh?
She did.
Apparently so. I could give you some interesting stories. Now, we can spend the rest of our time with anecdotes, real ones, about people I know that when it came time to give, they were in straits, but they were going to give. And shortly after that, things would happen they never expected, so far as some kind of income coming in, that kind of thing. Am I telling you God's going to do that? I'm not. I'm just saying I know it's happened to a number of people. But one thing is clear, when it comes to put in more, if put in more refers to faith, she's at the pretty top level of that, isn't she? Talk about trust now. Well, God will take care of me. Wow. That's faith. And you look, yes. Sir?
I didn't mean to cut you off. I can wait you.
No, you go right ahead.
And since it's about attitude, I have an example of that the three Hebrew boys. They told them that they wouldn't bow down if they God would deliver them. If he wouldn't, they wouldn't serve him. There was a specific attitude where they gave everything, even their life.
Good point. And they weren't sure God would preserve them. He said, it didn't make a difference. Whatever God chooses to do, we're not bound down. It's interesting in Matthew 6 to this audience that Jesus is talking to. And there's this big crowd. It's Sermon on the Mount. But at the very first of the sermon, there's a special audience. Who is it? The disciples. And it's interesting what he says in verse 30, right at the end of the verse. There's no problem understanding what Jesus said. What's the problem he focuses on? Believing it. Oh, you of little faith. He says, the treasures of the kingdom are greater than food and clothing and all these other things. Do you really believe that? That's the question. And so, really a question of faith. And then, the second, and I didn't put it on here. I probably should have put sense of priorities, high sense of priorities. I also put she put in more, if you're looking at an attitude of self-sacrifice. In 2 Corinthians 8, where we read a while ago, you don't have to go back over there, we read about these Macedonians. It says, they gave out of their deep poverty. And they were highly commended. Whether they could give as much as the Corinthians, I do not know. But the point is, they were willing to sacrifice. And Jesus commends them for that.
In verse 3, would this tie in? It says in 2 Corinthians 8, it says in verse 3 that they gave beyond their ability.
Good point.
That would tie in correctly. I mean, it is an attitude that goes along with, but that's what she did. She gave beyond her ability as opposed to the surplus that they were giving. I mean, they go to percentage, it goes to the fact that she gave out of the necessity she needed for day-to-day life, having faith that Christ would take care of her, that God would take care of her, as opposed to giving out of a surplus because, hey, I've got it in my pocket, or I'm doing fine. So.
Good point. And that point that Keith brings up about beyond their ability, I get the distinct impression that, I don't know if Paul did or somebody indicated, look, folks, we understand that you're just not in a position to be a part of this. Because the next verse says, they were begging us with much entreaty, we want to be a part of this. Isn't that interesting? And so what an attitude. Okay, question number 3. The rich put in out of their surplus or abundance. Most of us give out of our surplus or abundance. We're rich people, folks. United States of America. So for thought and discussion, what are some of the dangers associated with this? Malachi 1:14, what was the danger associated with the giving that's being described there that could easily characterize those who have plenty? Okay, that's certainly true. Well, yeah.
Holding back an acceptable sacrifice.
Okay. Instead of going to their flock and getting the good lamb, here's one of them. That lamb, I tell you, got a bad foot anyway. Oh, look, I got one eye bad. What difference does it make? And what was it reflective of? Look back up in verse... Look back in verse 6. What was God looking at? Did he care about the animal? Was he going to eat it? What was he looking at? Verse 6. Lack of honor and respect. Later he says, Verse 8. Here, offer it to your governor and see what happens. You know, if the president comes to town and some people go out to meet him and they want to make an impression, they go up to a used car and get an old car with a couple hubcaps missing and window busted out and go pick him up and say, "Hey, we got you a ride." How do you think that's going to fly? It's transportation. Are they going to go get the best car they can get, clean that dude up? What about when these people... Now, if you can't, that's one thing. These people could. And what he says in verse 14, "Cursed be the swindler who has a male in his flock and vows it to sacrifice a blemished animal to the Lord." Why? Because I am a great king. And our giving needs to reflect that. Isaiah 1, what was the danger there in Isaiah 1? Right. Displacing a substitute for obedience. Isaiah 1, 10 through 17. He said, verse 11, "I've had enough of your burnt offerings of ram, the fat of your fed cattle. I take no pleasure in the blood of bulls, lambs, or goats." And he said a little bit further, he said, verse 15, he said, "Your hands are covered with blood." Verse 17, "Learn to do good, seek justice, reprove the ruthless, defend the orphan." But we give. And there's people that give and go home, mistreat their family, don't take care of their jobs, dishonest on the job, mistreat their neighbors. But we put money in the plate. Matthew 23 and 24. These people were well off and they gave. In fact, they were meticulous about their giving. What's the problem here? What?
Hypocrites.
It became a measure of their righteousness. Instead of, he said, "You've neglected the weightier provisions of the law." They thought they were great. It's how much they gave and how meticulous they gave that became a measure of their righteousness. Never should it be that be the case. And then one other passage we have here, Philippians 4:18, is giving worship? How do you know it's worship in this text? The word worship appear in the verse? Right, the imagery is from the Old Testament in an act of worship where he calls it an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God. The fragrance of that sacrifice being offered went up to God. So, is it okay to just be lax about your worship? And you know, I've known of circumstances where people get mad at somebody or mad about a congregation. They say, "I'm going to quit giving." Well, why don't you quit singing? Why don't you quit observing the Lord's Supper? Oh, I can't do that. Why not? It's worship. And so giving is worship. It needs to be looked at as such. So we ask, what did you learn about Jesus? We've been talking about it all the way through. Some things that I noted. He observes and cares about our attitude in our giving more than he cares about the amount that we give. And so he appreciates people who may not have a lot to give materially, but they give a lot in their spirit of faith and self-sacrifice. And Jesus knows that. What a comfort that is to people who are giving with that kind of an attitude. And we've already mentioned about him knowing about our financial status. Go back to Mark 12. One other thing I want you to note. What do you learn about Jesus from verse 43? Now he's sitting here observing all this, but then there's something in verse 43.
He wants to teach the disciples. Use that example to teach the others.
He wants the disciples to think about their giving. Isn't that interesting? Calling the disciples, here, I've got a lesson for you. And Jesus wanted these men to think about it. How appropriate then our study tonight that we open the text and these other verses that prompts us to think about our giving. Thank you for your good comments tonight. We've got two more classes. We've got one in his commendation of the church at Pergamum on Sunday, the Lord willing. And then we'll have a review next Wednesday night. So thank you for your good comments tonight and your interest in the class.